increase in service is an intersection that has a four-way stop sign on it and allows 250 cars a day to cross. The installation of a stoplight would take that to 1,000 cars a day. Without paving any more street, we have significantly increased the level of service by installing that capital improvement, the stoplight. Well, if that example is any more useful to you than the others, but that's my favorite one anyway.
You see that as a valid use? Then.
That is a valid use. That not simply paving more roadway, but making the roadway that we have work to carry more traffic is an increase in level service and is an appropriate use of systems development charge monies.
Mr. Chairman, I'm satisfied.
Okay. As a practical matter, probably 90% of the time when a subdivision goes in, there's discussions about what types of impacts are going to be and what may be needed before the subdivision is totally built out in terms of maybe street improvements or sewer improvements and that type of thing. So it's kind of a partnership in that respect anyway, isn't it? And
yes.
It's only when there isn't that kind of discussion that there's a real problem.
Yes, though thanks to I think some fairly sophisticated development codes in most jurisdictions now, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the requirement in this bill that you credit the developer for installing part of the system
right.
off-site as a condition of approval, mm-hmm. I think we've established a good framework so that that's more certain and less of an open-ended negotiation than it might have been in the past.
Right. BJ, what would you say with the cities around the state that, and I know that they've looked at this pretty close, having followed the league's newsletter. Would you say that most of the cities are fairly comfortable with this at this point?
Mr. Chairman, that's a tough question, but I think that that's a true statement. I think most cities recognize that this will require some fine-tuning and readjustment of what they've been doing in the past to make certain that everything is taken care of structurally and systematically that we have in the bill. But in particular, most of our larger cities that have large amounts of systems development charges, the foundation is not unlike what we're talking about in the bill. We are hoping not to revolutionize systems development charges, but to put into state statute what we believe is good practice that exists in most cities already.
And I won't ask Jim if most home builders are satisfied, because I know some would just soon not have any systems development charges.
As you heard the other day, Mr. Chairman.
We helped them out in revenue this morning.
Oh, good. Well, you do something here and take something away there. we're in work session. If anybody would like to move the amendments.
Chair.
Representative Cease.
I would move amendments to House Bill 3224. That is those dash 1 minus line 9 and dash 3.
Okay, Representative Cease moves the amendments to House Bill 3224, Legislative Council 2547. The dash 1's deleting line 9 and the dash 3 amendments. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I was going to say, now I understand why they're so smug and feeling so good. If we look at line 8 of the dash 1 amendments, it deletes the public.
that only confuses things.
I can't object to that.
Okay, if there is no objection, we'll accept the amendments. And
here I move House Bill 3224 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Cease moves House Bill 3224 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Edward, would you call the roll?
Representative Cease?
Aye.
Representative Hostica?
Aye.
Representative Oakley?
Aye.
Representative Stein?
Aye.
Representative Wehage?
Aye.
Representative Markham? Representative Young?
Aye. Passes, and I'll carry this. Want to commend the league and the home builders and other interested parties, City of Portland, in getting together and working out an accommodation on this. And I think that it will give a certainty to what kind of charges are assessed when people develop and not only make things better in terms of the people that develop, but also citizens in knowing that new development is going to be carrying its share of the burden and what that money will be used for. Okay, we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 3413. And if you'll remember, at the last public hearing, we had all people that were opposed or in favor of House Bill 3413, and we have one more person that will testify in favor of the bill, and then we'll get into the response to that of those people that are opposed to the bill.
Good.
So I'd like to call forward Gail Overgaard.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As you mentioned, I'm in favor of House Bill 34.
Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Okay. It's Gail Overgaard, 282 Sterling, Eugene, Oregon. Good afternoon. I was a member of the Lane County Boundary Commission from about July 1984 to October 1988, which is a little over 4 years. During that period of time, I was chairman for 1 year in about 86-87 period. I'll have to say that I served with a group of very dedicated individuals, and they were very, very serious. I'd like to make a couple points with regard to the bill and the Boundary Commission. Originally, early in my term, we processed several special service district requests, and the creation of special service districts, annexations, and fire districts. The staff was always really thorough and prepared, and I thought this was an effective use of the Boundary Commission. In the later years, it became, in my opinion, an arm of the City of Eugene Planning Department. It was a duplication of work that I saw that was done by the City of Eugene and then was more or less rubber stamped by the Boundary Commission. I want to stress that the Boundary Commission staff is very dedicated. Steve Gordon is probably one of the best qualified land use planners in the state, in my opinion. The Boundary Commission staff will be available if the Boundary Commission is eliminated because they are employed by LCOG, as you probably well know. And if the commission is eliminated, the city's special service districts and so on can pay their own way by contracting with LCOG. I had a couple points that I wanted to bring to your attention. I felt there was a lack of impartiality because the staff seemed to operate as an arm of the City of Eugene. They felt pressure from the city. An example would be a period of time that the Boundary Commission excluded some territories or some properties that the city had recommended, non-contiguous properties that the city had recommended to be annexed in the airport annexation area. There was quite a bit of pressure applied by the City of Eugene to annex some areas in the airport area. There's another example of partiality is at one period in time I asked for advice regarding cherry stem annexation on River Road, using River Road as cherry stem. And the first advice that I got was from the City of Eugene's attorney. So it was a bit partial in my estimation at that point in time. Basically, I guess the point that I'd like to make is that if the Boundary Commission were eliminated, I think the staff, the expertise is still there and can be contracted by the appropriate entity. If you have any other questions of me, I'd be glad to answer.
What period of time did you serve on the commission?
From July of 84 through about October of 88.
So about the most recent period?
Yeah.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jim Saul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Saul. I'm the chairman of the Lane County Boundary Commission. Mr. Gordon has just handed your assistant copies of my written testimony, and I'm going to just briefly summarize it orally at this point. Also included in the material he will be handing to you is a copy of a resolution from the City of Florence in opposition to House Bill 3413. And also there are some maps that I will refer to subsequently in my testimony that deals with a particular matter that came up in the hearing before you 2 weeks ago.
Before you get started, you're familiar with the testimony that was given last or 2 weeks ago?
Yes, sir. Okay. I was present during that hearing.
Okay.
I wanted at the very beginning to...
Representative Hostica.
Just so we understand the record, what is your profession when you're not a boundary commission chair?
I'm a private land use planning consultant. I think I should start by indicating that the Lane County Boundary Commission has reviewed House Bill 3413, and The commission recognizes that it is a creature of the legislature. It was created 20 years ago by the legislature, and it is certainly within the purview of the legislature to eliminate the commission. And for that reason, we didn't feel it was appropriate necessarily to take a direct position on whether or not the commission should remain in existence. We do think there are a few key issues, however, that we would like to draw your attention to and have you consider as you make that determination. 20 years ago, the legislature made a determination that there was a definite statewide interest in how local government boundary determinations were made. The statute creating the commission cites some of those reasons, and they include such matters as halting the fragmented approach to public service delivery, providing a method for guiding the creation and growth of cities and special service districts, to assure adequate quality and quantity of public services and financial integrity of each unit of local government, and finally to provide an impartial forum for resolution of local government jurisdictional issues. We believe that many of the situations which existed on the urban fringe in 1969 still exist today. Examples include densely populated areas which lack one or more necessary public services, the problem of financial loss to special service districts as territory is annexed to cities and withdrawn from those districts, the demand for urban services by residents living outside of urban growth boundaries, and finally continued pressure to create new service entities resulting in potential fragmentation and inefficient service delivery in the future. For these reasons, we believe there is and should be a continuing state interest in boundary changes and service delivery issues in Oregon's second largest metropolitan area. The Eugene Springfield has tremendous growth potential, and under acknowledged comprehensive plans, that growth is going to bring increasing pressures on the urban fringe areas. One of the problems we see with House Bill 3413 is that if it is approved, many of the standards in ORS 199 will be lost. They are not in either ORS 22, the city annexation statute, nor are they in ORS 198, the special district statute. The loss of these standards may not be in the state's best interest. Assuming there continues to be a state interest in orderly and efficient development in metropolitan areas, the Lane County Boundary Commission is willing to work with the legislature to examine better models for maintaining that interest. As one example, there must be ways in which we can eliminate duplication for annexation to cities within acknowledged urban growth boundaries. As you review House Bill 3413, we really ask you to consider two questions. One, will returning boundary change processes to cities in Lane County provide the model to maintain Oregon's long-term interest in an impartial manner with knowledgeable decisions based on clear standards? Or two, will abolishment of the commission return Lane County to an era where additional problems are created on the urban fringe, which will require unnecessary debate and expense for future citizens of the region and the state? That is an appropriate judgment for the legislature to make, and we remain available to assist you in any way. Based on the review of the testimony that was presented last week, there were three specific issues and two general issues, with your permission, that I would like to comment upon. The first specific one is Representative Campbell testified that only five annexations have been reviewed under the expedited procedure in the past 2 years. We reviewed our records, and in calendar year 1988, just that one calendar year, 44 actions were approved, boundary change actions were approved in Lane County. 23 of those were under the expedited procedure, 21 were through the public hearing process. And that's, again, one of those areas that would be lost if Lane County did not have the benefits of Chapter 199. Councilor Homer testified before you that the Boundary Commission was not required to apply statewide goals. That information was incorrect. The Boundary Commission is required under ORS 199.410 to apply either acknowledged comprehensive plans or the statewide goals to any decisions it makes. Further, an Attorney General opinion number 8101 also imposes the same requirement. And finally, the state agency coordination rule the Commission was required to adopt as a result of ORS 197 imposes the same requirement, and that rule has been certified by the Land Conservation and Development Commission. You heard a fairly extensive amount of testimony about a recent matter that was and remains in front of the Boundary Commission involving the Oaks Mobile Home Park, and I wanted to comment upon that briefly. In that particular matter, the application was filed by Willamette Water Company to extend water service to the Oaks Mobile Home Park. Willamette Water Company is a private company that purchases water from the Eugene Water and Electric Board. The area within which Willamette Water Company can provide water is precisely defined in a three-party agreement between Willamette Water Company, the Eugene Water and Electric Board, and the City of Eugene, which under its charter has authority over all water extensions. Oaks Mobile Home Park is located outside those three defined areas within which water service can be extended. Consequently, consent was required from both EWEB and the City of Eugene before that water service could be extended and basically amend the existing agreement. Willamette Water Company was advised at the time of filing the application of the necessity for that particular consent. And contrary to some of the testimony you received, that the necessity for that consent was made evident from the very beginning of the proceedings. The Commission's first hearing on the application occurred on December 1st. The December 1st staff report specifically noted that particular requirement, and during his testimony at the December 1st hearing, Mr. Stewart asked the Commission to go ahead and approve it on an interim basis and give him a few days and he could work things out with the City of Eugene. There was one further problem with the particular application, and that was that the proposed extension violated several policies of the acknowledged comprehensive plan. That was acknowledged. Former Governor Straub testified at our hearing and acknowledged that it violated those policies, but urged us to approve it anyway. The response of the commission at the December 1st hearing was to postpone the matter to a special hearing on December 29th, based on the representation that these difficulties could be resolved through negotiations with the City of Eugene. We had the hearing on December 29th. Nothing had been resolved, and so the commission was totally sympathetic to the particular problem, and in an effort to minimize future delays, continued the matter again to allow this resolution process to try to be completed. But at least at that time, we had a situation where the source of water was prevented by the existing three-party agreement, and there was the issue of inconsistency with acknowledged plans. That was the reason for the commission's action, and the basic information was known to all of the parties from the outset of the proceeding. Those were the three specific areas that I wanted to comment upon. There are two general ones that I would also like to comment upon. A fair amount of the testimony that you received 2 weeks ago dealt with the issue of appointed people making a judgment as opposed to elected representatives. That is legitimately a philosophical question that your committee and the legislature can deal with. I would point out that there are certainly other instances of appointed groups, such as the Land Conservation and Development Commission and others in the state that are not elected, that make fairly significant decisions affecting local areas. The other general comment had to do with the testimony that as a result of the statewide planning program and the existence of acknowledged plans, that the functions of the commission were no longer needed. I would simply point out to you that one of the things, key things that the Boundary Commission deals with are creation of special service districts and potentially the creation of cities. If you look at Lane County's plan, there isn't a single policy in that plan that deals with either the creation of special service districts or the creation of cities. And there are some significant gaps there that would be removed from the standards in 199 if the bill is passed. I appreciate your time. I would be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Stein.
I may be off here since I was out of the room. I want to get a sense of how much business you do as the commission during a year. How many cases do you handle or situations?
As I indicated, in calendar year 88, just that calendar year, there were 44 boundary change actions that were submitted, 23 through the expedited process, 21 went through the public hearing process.
Thank you.
Representative Wehage.
I want to zero in on use of the word impartial. I'm a little concerned about if the Boundary Commission is done away with, then I presume it's going to revert back to the County Commission to handle issues such as this. That's my understanding. And of course, they're involved in making decisions all the time about matters that go on in the county. Is there any experience to suggest that they would not be impartial, or that they might be subject to greater political pressures in their decision-making process for Boundary Commission activities, boundary changes?
That's a difficult question to answer, sir. Certainly they would be subject to greater political pressure on some of these matters. Whether that would result in impartiality is a judgment I don't feel comfortable in making.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Seat.
Let me respond to that if I might. I think I would be the first to say it would be hard to argue that a Boundary Commission members are not political in the sense that they don't have ideas and that they, in a sense,
represent certain interests. But there are a couple of provisions in the statutes that I think are important, and I think they've been bones of contention, but still I think they're merit. One is the requirement that you can't have more than so many realtors, more than people that represent certain interests on the board, and that you can't be an elected local official to be a member of the board. Now, that's been a bone of contention with local officials from the very beginning, but I think that provision is, I've always felt it had merit. As I recall, when I was first served on the Portland Boundary Commission, and we had an early hearing in Hillsborough, and we came into the chamber, as the Boundary Commission came into the chamber, and we had a situation somewhat like this, though there was a gate in front of the council area up here. And what was intriguing about it, and the citizens noted it and commented upon it, was that for the first time there was a different body up here making the judgment, and in the audience you had the citizens and the members of the council and the representatives of the city. That, I think, is a feature of it that is the most, what I would say, the most impartial aspect of it is, that is, the city representatives who have interests, who have connections, have to make their appeal before the Boundary Commission in the same way that everyone else does, and there is, in that sense, they have to come up as other witnesses. And that's a vast difference than when you have it where you simply come before the council or the county commission. Now, whether that's worth retaining, I suppose individuals have to argue it, but I think it's a major difference, and I think it's a major reason why in some of these areas, despite the conflicts over specific issues, that those bodies work very well.
Do you ever say no annexation? How many did you do last? Did you say you did 44?
Yes, sir.
Were there any that you rejected?
There were some that we modified in part. I do not recall any rejections. Now, I am referring at this point to annexation to cities.
And, right.
And the situation there, that is the one area where the state land use program and the adoption and acknowledgement of urban growth boundaries has made the scope of judgment much less significant in that particular instance.
Okay, getting back to Governor Straub and his water company and all of that, and kind of going by what I read in the papers in our area, there's very seldom a boundary dispute between two cities in our area that there aren't two or three quotes from the Boundary Commission's members saying, why don't you people get out of this room and go back and settle your own problems and then come back to us in terms of disputes. And it seems to me a little bit maybe the same in the case of the water service. I mean, we had people, if the testimony was correct, that were getting sick from not having adequate water in the mobile home park, and you're saying you can't, your hands are tied, and that you don't have the authority to tell somebody, let alone to grant to somebody, the authority to give them good water?
Several comments with respect to that. First of all, with respect to the ill health effects, we specifically asked for, at our first meeting, documentation as to whether or not you were dealing with a health hazard situation. No one could provide any documentation to that effect in writing. One gentleman got up and testified that he felt ill and had some vomiting, and that he ascribed that to the water situation. But more importantly, as I indicated earlier, there are specific statutory requirements as well as a state agency coordination rule that say we have to act in compliance with acknowledged plans. And there was specific evidence that this particular proposal did not comply with the acknowledged plan. And I don't think, the commission was extremely sympathetic to trying to resolve the situation, but it would have been totally inappropriate for us, in my view, to have taken the action of approving the request in direct contravention of those acknowledged plans. That we did, the commission did direct, and I wrote a letter to the city manager of Eugene urging them to try to work out a solution to it so that we could allow the extension.
Okay, getting back to the specific thing of the water, it's my understanding that somebody told them your water is not up to standard because of the bacteria count. I think they're required to do testing on a community system like that. They even went to the point of trying to drill wells, and they still were testing, and they were out of compliance. It seems like even in the absence of a doctor's note or something, there'd be an indication there that if there weren't documented problems right now, that somebody in the state thought that that system was inadequate.
In my recollection, the material submitted to us indicated that there were contamination problems with the well, or water as it came directly from the well, that they had installed a temporary system that was treating it and eliminating the contamination.